From Bloomsburg to Cowdersport, Irwin to Williamsport, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, state lawmakers will return from their long summer recess in a couple of weeks, and a lengthy list of controversial issues awaits their attention. Carl Marrera from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to host a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And have you forgotten how you felt that day, September 11th, 2001? I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. For weeks, Governor Tom Wolf said he would not impose a mask mandate on the state's K-12 public schools. Local school boards, in often contentious meetings, made masking policy based upon community input. Then last week, Wolf reversed course and issued a mask mandate, citing an obscure, nearly centuries-old law to skirt a new constitutional requirement that requires legislative approval. Wolf had asked lawmakers to implement the mask mandate, but legislative leaders refused, prompting Wolf to take action on his own. That resulted in a firestorm of criticism from Republican lawmakers, who say the governor's action violates the new constitutional restrictions on his emergency powers. Individual school districts must now decide whether or not to enforce the governor's mandate. With open seats for both U.S. Senator and governor on the ballot next year, large fields of candidates have emerged for the posts. Also up for grabs is the office of lieutenant governor, which to date has drawn little interest. That is until this past week, when former state representative Rick Saccone announced that he will seek the post. Saccone lost a high-profile special election for a congressional seat in 2017 to now Congressman Connor Lamb, who recently announced his U.S. Senate candidacy. Saccone retired after a long career as a counterintelligence officer in the U.S. Air Force before earning a Ph.D. from the University of Pittsburgh and becoming an adjunct professor at St. Vincent College in La Trobe. Pennsylvania Auditor General Tim DeFore recently announced plans to restructure his agency. He has appointed a chief transformation officer to lead the effort. According to the Center Square, DeFore said he is undertaking a top-down review of the Auditor General's operations to study organization, skills gaps, training needs, and technology requirements. DeFore took office in January and said that, quote, "It is abundantly clear that this department cannot continue to do things the way we have always done them, especially under tight funding restraints." Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. State lawmakers decamped from Harrisburg after passing a new budget at the end of June. They are scheduled to return to session in a couple of weeks. From congressional redistricting to health care reforms, a wide range of issues awaits action. Here with a preview of the fall legislative agenda is our Capital Watch crew. Sitting in for David Taylor is Carl Marrera from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. He is joined by Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and by Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity. Carl?
Welcome to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, Carl Marrera, Vice President of Government Affairs for the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. And joining me this week is Rebecca Euler, the President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association. Rebecca, thanks for being with us today.
Great to be back with you, Carl.
And Ashley Klingensmith, the State Director for Americans for Prosperity, Pennsylvania. Ashley, welcome to Capital Watch.
Carl, great to be with you. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, guys, it seems like forever ago, and it's been kind of largely forgotten. But I mean, think about it. It was just 7 months ago that Governor Wolf proposed a 50% personal income tax increase. That's an almost, in addition to that, an almost doubling of the state minimum wage, a new additional tax on natural gas production, mandatory unitary combined reporting, and other, I mean, hosts of uncompetitive ideas. Luckily, the legislature pushed back throughout this past year, but I mean, these bad ideas still kind of linger out there. We're faced with workforce shortages, tax uncertainty, out-of-control inflation, ever-rising energy costs, fuel costs. Business owners, employees, and good government advocates have their eye on Harrisburg and are worried about the future and this fall legislative session and what could be happening here in our Commonwealth. Rebecca, as a Harrisburg veteran, one of my concerns is that the fall legislative session in a non-political cycle for the House and Senate can sometimes spell trouble. And add to that that this is the last year that the Wolf administration has an office. This could be a time when bad ideas get attention. Is that a concern to you? And do you share the same concerns that I have?
Yeah, always. You're right, Carl. In the 2-year political cycle we have here in Harrisburg, of course, between elections for the General Assembly, that's in the odd off years, it's definitely easier for the legislature to put up votes that might be a little unpopular. So this is when we might typically see a tax increase or some of the other bad policy options that you just mentioned. This is when they would typically come up in an off year when our legislators aren't standing up for election. So for instance, I'm old enough. You said I'm a Harrisburg veteran. I guess that makes me old enough to remember the infamous 2005 pay raise that the Pennsylvania General Assembly voted for itself and for judges and executive branch officials. That was passed during the summer of 2005 in a non-election year. So that's a good example of what can happen in sort of an off year. And in that case, the backlash was so great that it resulted in a Supreme Court justice not being retained for the first time in history that November. And I think there were essentially about over 20 lawmakers that lost their jobs as a result of that that pay increase the following year. So I do think that example makes legislatures a little more cognizant not to take too much advantage of the off-year session. And we do have the advantage that the budget is already done for the 2021-22 fiscal year. That was completed, of course, in June. And that's where typically we would see some deal-making that results in some of those bad policies like you mentioned, too.
What about executive orders? Could this be the fall and winter of executive orders for all the things the Wolf administration wanted that they didn't get?
Well, sure. I mean, executive orders, as we've seen, the Wolf administration absolutely has been willing to take advantage of executive actions, whether that be through regulation or executive orders or however they can, try to get things done. So absolutely, we have to be on the lookout for executive actions like executive orders that might try to take advantage of issues that the governor believes he has the authority to rule on without the General Assembly's involvement. Now, it does help that the people of Pennsylvania approved the constitutional amendment that limits the governor's emergency declaration powers. So that kind of does eliminate some of the executive actions that the governor might be wanting to take. He can only declare an emergency declaration for 20 days, I think it is, 21 days.
Mm-hmm.
So that helps a bit, but this administration has not been shy about using executive powers.
Very good. Thank you so much for that. And Ashley, very broadly, what are the topic areas that your organization is focused on as state legislators are scheduled to return for voting session starting in late September?
Yeah, thanks so much, Carl. Well, listen, you listed out this laundry list of threats as we began this conversation. And you know, I suppose the good news is there's 18 scheduled session days for both chambers, and so there is limited time. And so at Americans for Prosperity, we are focusing on what usually cannot be accomplished, before the summer break in quarter one and quarter two, and that is passing some controls on state spending. It always seems to get kind of tied up with budget concerns and let's wait till another time. And so we really believe this fall is the time to finally pass what the majority of other states in America have done, which is pass some spending controls and place some limits on what these guys and gals can do every year in a budget. And so, you know, we just passed a budget with an 8.8% increase in government spending. And when bailout money disappears, you know, tax hikes will inevitably be on the table. And so, you know, at AFP, we've tried to prioritize reforms this session frankly, both in Harrisburg and in D.C. that protect public health and save lives, of course, and that also will get our economy going again and save livelihoods and help all of us recover stronger. And so for us, ground zero for that in Pennsylvania is the Taxpayer Protection Act. That is a constitutional amendment. So just like voters had the opportunity to weigh in on that May 18th ballot question that Rebecca just talked about with respect to gubernatorial executive powers, this will create another opportunity for the electorate to weigh in on state spending. And Representative Seth Grove took action at the beginning of this year on House Bill 71, which is the enabling legislation to get this on our ballot. And so we want to see the full House take this up. Now is the time. Again, all of that bailout money is eventually going to disappear, and tough, you know, decisions and choices are going to have to be made. And the reality is that state spending has consistently grown over the past five decades while we have had a shrinking population. And it does not take a mathematician to realize when the tax base is decreasing and state spending is increasing, those of us paying taxes will be paying an ever-increasing, you know, annual note to Harrisburg. All Taxpayer Protection Act would do is limit spending to the rate of population growth and the rate of inflation. And so we just think both of those are common sense things that the legislature needs to look at. And I will just note, if we had the Taxpayer Protection Act this year, the legislature could have increased general fund spending in this budget by $716 million. Instead, they increased it by more than $1.3 billion. And so this is an issue that's a no-brainer. Two-thirds of voters across the political spectrum support limiting the growth of state government. And so this is going to be our number one ground zero issue that we're going to be trying to drive under the dome.
And we're right there with you. And you're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, Carl Moreira, and joining me is Rebecca Euler of the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. We're previewing the fall legislative session here in Harrisburg and what we should look for from a policy and from a political standpoint. And Rebecca, I mean, I love a good bit of alliteration. And to me, the fall legislative session will be focused on three R's. And to me, those three R's are the regional greenhouse gas initiative, regulations, and redistricting. What are your thoughts? Do you think that those three might be the things that get the attention of the legislators in Harrisburg, or do you see some other high interest items on the horizon?
Well, I hope you're right, Carl. I like the first two of your three R's, and I also hope Ashley's right and that we see some movement on the Taxpayer Protection Act. That'd be great. With regard to Reggie, the governor is continuing to push a cap and trade program on carbon dioxide emissions from Pennsylvania power plants through a regulation. So this comes back to the executive actions that we discussed the governor is fond of. The General Assembly passed a bill, I believe that was Senate Bill 119, that would actually require REGI to be approved by the General Assembly before it goes into effect. And that passed the Senate in a bipartisan vote and is now in the House. So it would be really nice to see that move, because the governor, as we speak, is still planning to move forward with bringing Pennsylvania into the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative. So I do hope we see action on that, the General Assembly to vote to approve REGI before we can join, which I think is appropriate.
What about regulations and redistricting?
As everyone probably knows, every 10 years following the census, the General Assembly has to do two things. Basically, they have to redraw the U.S. congressional districts. That's a tough job this year because we lost another congressional district as a result of, we're growing slower than other states. We're now down to 17 districts from 18, so they have to redraw those lines in order to account for that loss of a congressional seat. And that plan that they come up with will be passed into the law as an act of the General Assembly, just like any other act. But on the other hand, the legislative reapportionment for the state House and Senate districts, that's handled by the Legislative Reapportionment Commission, which is holding hearings right now to discuss how to redraw those lines. So you mentioned regulations. This is another thing, obviously, we would really like to see. I know Ashley would like to see done. There have been, for several sessions now, several regulatory reforms that have been proposed and have passed one House in many cases, but just haven't made it through the whole way and passed by the second House. And usually the Senate. In this case, I believe there are several of these bills that have passed the House but haven't been considered by the Senate yet. And basically, it's a package of bills that would help remove some of the regulatory burden on businesses, and in particular, small businesses that have to manage the additional cost and oversight requirements of complying with just a whole slew of regulations in our state. So some of these bills, like, for instance, creating an Office of the Repealer that would actually look at all of our existing regulations, which are pretty voluminous, and determine whether or not we need to look at repealing some of those. Putting regulatory compliance officers in state agencies that would help the regulated community actually comply with the regulations rather than focused on punishing and you know, putting the screws on businesses, actually helping them comply. Allowing the General Assembly to repeal regulations, that's a good one too. Just tracking regulations online, that's something, you know, we're in the 21st century now, we should really be able to do. So those are some of the things that I hope the General Assembly is able to move this fall. We'd love to see it.
Well, I know during COVID and the emergency declaration, a number of regulations were actually rolled back, and here we all still are. And it makes you wonder whether or not those regulations are necessary. If they weren't necessary during a pandemic, then why are they necessary in everyday life? And Ashley, while our Commonwealth has been plagued with so many downstream impacts of the COVID responses from Harrisburg, one area where we saw some of these burdens alleviated that I was talking about earlier was in the context of healthcare. Share a little bit about the future of these loosened restrictions and some of your priorities as we march into the fall here.
Yeah, thanks so much. So, you know, on May 6th of last year, the governor announced this temporary blanket waiver that would ease so many licensing and supervision requirements for a lot of our licensed professionals. And it was designed in part to protect some of our practitioners for good faith actions taken in response to the COVID pandemic, as well as expanding access on the healthcare front to healthcare professionals specially suited to meet kind of the growing demands that the pandemic was presenting. And so all of those temporary waivers are set to expire this month on the 30th. And so there is a real need for the legislature to act. We think there are a number of great pieces of legislation that can help and fit the bill when it comes to, making certain that some of these individuals that have been deemed heroes by so many of us are able to continue the good work they've been doing. And so there is a great kind of all-encompassing bill sponsored by Representative Quinn, House Bill 1011, that would direct the Joint State Government Committee, with the assistance of healthcare professionals and administrative officials, to make recommendations as to which of those waivers and administrative flexibilities should remain permanently in place. It's called the Retaining Healthcare Innovations Act, which I just think is a great subject for a bill. But the reality is, we've had so many individuals, healthcare providers and consumers and patients alike, who have come to rely upon all of these regulatory waivers and flexibilities. And when they abruptly end, there's going to be, you know, significant, I think, consequence for, like I said, both patients and providers. You know, additionally, we have bills like Senate Bill 25, sponsored by Senator Tamara Bartolotta, which would essentially allow some of our advanced practice registered nurses to be able to finally practice to the fullest extent of their training, of their education, and of their experience. And so what this legislation would do is license, the State Board of Nursing would establish an advanced practice RN certified nurse practitioner license in areas of expertise consistent with their training and focus, and that would replace the current state certification requirement. And they would also, after meeting a three-year, 3,600-hour physician collaborative agreement, they would be able, these nurses, to practice to that full extent of their education and training by removing that requirement that we've had in Pennsylvania for a formal collaborative agreement that is currently required of them to practice and write prescriptions. And so combined with that new licensing standard, it's going to allow these registered nurses to provide health care in an environment free from all those unnecessary administrative burdens that clearly have outlived their usefulness. And it would also, we know, help to expand access to health care in areas of the Commonwealth that are traditionally underserved. And so, you know, we would not be trailblazers to do this. There's 22 other states, and I also believe the District of Columbia allows nurse practitioners full practice authority. So this is a no-brainer, and I think, you know, after the year that Pennsylvanians have endured, we owe it to so many of our healthcare providers to finally pass reforms like this that have languished in the legislative process for many sessions, you know, throughout the past decade. And so we saw CRNA, Certified Registered Nurse Anesthetist, finally get title designation this year. That was a huge healthcare reform that moved. And so we just have to keep the ball rolling, and you can trust we're going to keep the pressure on folks in committees and our leaders in both chambers.
Well, thank you to both of you for all of the expertise that you've given us. And that's really all the time that we have on Capital Watch for this week. And Ashley, thank you so much for joining us. Where can the listeners go to learn more about you and the work that AFP PA is doing?
Absolutely. AmericansForProsperity.org. There is a state drop-down menu. Simply select Pennsylvania. I also really encourage folks to find us, follow us on Facebook. We are at PAAFP. We actively update that page. And so really, it's a great resource. So we look forward to meeting you there and seeing you there.
And Rebecca, thank you to you as well. And the same for you. Where can the listeners go to learn about you and your work?
Absolutely. They can learn about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association at PMTA.org.
And to stay up to date with what's happening in your state government, go to our website at PAManufacturers.org. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, Carl. Have you forgotten how you felt that day? To see your homeland under fire and her people blown away? Have you forgotten when those towers fell? That song by country music artist Darryl Worley became popular in the aftermath of the September 11, 2001 terror attacks. The war on terror has been unlike any other war. It has ambled on relentlessly for 20 years, sometimes unseen except for periodic developments that forced themselves into the nation's consciousness. Memories of that sunlit morning of September 11, 2001 had begun to fade, and an entire new generation of Americans has since been born. Had we forgotten? To a large degree, we had. The national unity spawned by the terrorist attacks has been replaced with partisan rancor. Concern over national security takes a backseat to a woke agenda. Removal of obscure Confederate-era statues receives more media coverage than the ongoing terror threat. But events of the past few weeks have dramatically and tragically reminded us of the challenges that remain, even as we prepare to commemorate the 20th anniversary of the attacks on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and yet another plane which heroes ditched into a field in Somerset County. Flight 93 is first and foremost in my memory of September 11, 2001. At the time, I was serving as a Dauphin County commissioner, and the first plane flew into the World Trade Center just before we began our weekly meeting. At the moment, it was not yet clear the crash was not an accident, but rather an act of terrorism. By the time we ended our meeting, there was no doubt America was under attack, and Flight 93 was rumored to be headed south. We now know the terrorists on Flight 93 were trying to get to Washington, D.C. For what seemed like hours, but actually were just minutes, we were concerned the Three Mile Island nuclear plant located just downriver was a target. Then Flight 93 disappeared from the radar screen. The nation responded in anger and resolve. In the weeks and months, even years after the attack, we were focused on finding and killing the mastermind of the attacks, Osama bin Laden, and destroying the al-Qaeda training camps, many of which were in Afghanistan. In that initial mission, we succeeded. Rather than leave Afghanistan, the mission changed into one of nation building in the vain hope a reasonably rational government could be established and hold another terror group, the Taliban, at bay. That fight resulted in over 2,000 American military deaths and more than 20,000 wounded in action. Add in civilian contractor deaths, and the toll rises to over 4,000. The financial cost exceeds $2 trillion. The war had been winding down. Until last week, there had been no military deaths in over 18 months, with the number of U.S. forces greatly reduced to about 2,500. But it was time for America to leave and put an end to our longest war. How you leave, however, matters. And tragically, President Joe Biden triggered the greatest foreign policy disaster in a generation by botching the final withdrawal. We are painfully aware of how 20 years of blood and treasure was squandered by the politicians as the Taliban swiftly regained control of Afghanistan. We watched in horror as American citizens and Afghan nationals who had aided our effort frantically tried to get to the airport in Kabul as scenes eerily reminiscent of the fall of Saigon at the end of the Vietnam War flashed across our television screens. To this day, there are Americans still trapped in Afghanistan. They are now essentially Taliban hostages because the Biden administration has left them behind. Clearly more time was needed, but Joe Biden bowed to the Taliban and stubbornly refused to delay the August 31st withdrawal deadline. The weakness projected by the American president then reached its inevitable end. Suicide bombers attacked the gates of the airport and a nearby hotel. 13 American servicemen and women died in the blast. Have you forgotten how you felt that day, September 11th, 2001? If you had, the events of August 26, 2021 should bring those memories flooding back. 13 of our finest killed by terrorists, brought home in flag-draped coffins. We must never forget. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 26 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WJSA-FM in Jersey Shore, along with WCCL-FM and WADJ-AM in Johnstown, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations, including the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, all of whom have helped to underwrite the cost of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.